were there to enforce the rules. And most of the tiny group that fell into the latter category was already stationed at the front door, turning away guys like Brad and me. The partygoers who saw us, the ones who were there purely for fun, couldn't care less about our method of entry. "You want a beer?" Brad asked. "Nah," I said. "I'm gonna get in line," he said. There were two lines for beer, a guy's line and a girl's line. Fraternity brothers worked the keg behind the bar and evidently also chose which line to give priority to. The guy's line snaked all the way across the floor of the basement to the stairwell where people were entering from the front door upstairs. The girl's line was three girls long. Anyway, I decided I didn't want to drink until I was 21. It wasn't like I wanted to take the moral high road. I just didn't like breaking laws. Unless those laws happened to be preventing me from an opportunity to meet girls, in which case I was happy to engage in a bit of trespassing via a basement window. While Brad waited in line, I made my way to the other side of the basement, where the sticky tile floor dropped several feet to another level that served as a dance floor. It was packed with sweaty revelers. Rap music was blaring. Most people held a red plastic solo cup in one hand and gripped the body of a dance partner with the other. Unlike high school, I saw, there was not much circle dancing at a frat party. Grinding was rampant. Virtually everyone was paired off. The guys who didn't have a girl to dance with prowled the open floor on the higher level, watching for a girl who didn't have a guy on her already. I spotted a smile and a wave that seemed to be directed at me. I waved back. It was Paulette, another freshman. I'd hung out with her a few times. Not like we should hang out sometime hanging out, just with a group or whatever. She motioned me over to where she was dancing with her friends. In contrast to the semi-intoxicated bros prowling the perimeter, I didn't want to accost a girl I had never met with a proposition to dance. So Paulette was an ideal candidate for CFDing. After all, she was probably here in search of a dance partner, right? Maybe even a boyfriend. I mean, why else would you come to a frat party? Plus, I wasn't going to grind on her. I would just put my hands on her hips and then we would sway back and forth together. It would be fun. Good old-fashioned CFDing. Maybe that's why she had motioned me to come over in the first place. She wanted to dance with a boy she knew. A boy like me. It took me a full 20 minutes to work up the courage. I would tell myself, at the end of this song. No, at the end of this song. And so forth. Finally, I just did it, like tearing off a band-aid. All at once, I took a step forward on my fake leg, so I was only a few inches away from her, placing my hands on her waist and trying to smile a friendly rather than nervous smile. She immediately snapped back, pushing my hands away like she was ripping off a pair of pants she had just discovered to be infested with spiders. "Sorry," she said, slowing down a little as if she was worried she had overreacted. "I just don't want to dance like that." The way she had instantly shoved away my hands, as if they were too grotesque to allow near her body, as if they were infected with some contagious disease, was more personal and painful than the worst case scenario I could have imagined. I was so shocked that for a moment I dropped my mask of confidence. The hurt was written on my face. All that time I had wasted building up my nerve, that entire internal monologue pep talk had been for nothing. In fact, worse than for nothing. It had led me to rejection, a violent physical rejection. Getting rejected by a girl you are trying to dance with is different from getting rejected by one you asked out on a date. Not necessarily better or worse, just different. When a girl says no to a date, you presume there was some logic behind her decision. She made an evaluation of you in her mind, summing up your traits, her attraction to you, your past history, your 5-year plan, the make and model of your car, etc. And then she gave you her answer, no. But when a girl rejects your advance on the dance floor, it is something deeper, more instinctive, more visceral. She is, at a fundamental gut level, not attracted to you. In fact, she is in some way repelled by you, by your smell, by your presence, by the feeling of your body touching hers. Her rejection of you is precognitive, a pure animal reflex. The dance floor rejection has a stronger physical charge, then. Your body is not enough. I don't want it near mine. And this charge is amplified, I think, if you happen to be an amputee, because it throws a spark on the kindling of insecurity you are already harboring concerning the shape of your body. At any rate, I could not, I would not, dance in the presence of Paulette and her friends after that rejection. I was angry and hurt and humiliated. I waved a wordless goodnight and turned to go find Brad. Paulette grabbed my arm. Wait, stay and dance with us some more. She was smiling. I couldn't tell if she was trying to make up for the way she had made me feel or if she was just completely oblivious to it. I offered no explanation. That I was walking away communicated everything I had to say. I found Brad. I'm leaving. Now? I nodded tersely. You want me to come with you? If you want. He looked around, surveying the room, and then back at me. All right, hold on. He downed his beer in a single gulp, tossing the cup into a nearby trash can, and we left out the front door. Despite my anger, or perhaps because of it, I couldn't help but look over my shoulder and smile at the bouncers as we exited, pushing through the crowd that was trying to get in. Suckers. Brad and I sat outside, and I told him what had happened, and he listened. I had to admit, having a friend to talk about it with did not make me feel better. Not completely, that is. But it did feel better than holding it all inside. Chapter 26. As you may be aware, most formal dating relationships in college, in the rare cases that they actually exist, start with hooking up. If a couple hooks up enough times and they find themselves waking up beside each other with frequency and, here's the major turning point, going to the dining hall for breakfast together, they may be headed toward an actual boyfriend-girlfriend type relationship. But as I said, it's rare for couples to pair off in this formal way on a college campus. So what you get instead are what I call ambiguous college relationships. In an ACR, sometimes you get drunk and make out, then don't talk for a couple of days, then you have coffee together, then you don't talk for a while, then get drunk and make out again, then wonder if you may in fact be dating this person now, or whether it is merely a friends with benefits situation. I lump all these relationships under the umbrella of emotional confusion that is the ACR. Anyway, since I didn't drink, or for that matter, hook up, I still had not even kissed a girl. I was a little old-fashioned in that I was actually trying to go on, you know, dates. The difficult thing about asking a girl on a date at college is that it's rare to be in a one-on-one conversation with her. You're always in a group, a table at the cafeteria, a circle standing around after class, a mass of nude streakers. My point is, it's tough to ask a girl out or even say we should hang out sometime because there are other ears listening. Not only might she reject you, she might reject you in front of an audience. It took several months past forever to spot such a perfect moment with Lily, this girl I'd met at a Christian event on campus. She was cute and she never asked me about how I lost my leg, which I took as a sign my disability wasn't important to her. Finally, one night, we were both in the Pizza Hut in the university center, and I saw her get up from her table to go to the bathroom. I got up from my own table and followed her. No perverts, I wasn't following her to the bathroom. I was just trying to make sure the vector of her movement and the vector of mine had an intersection at the end of the aisle. Fortunately, I'm pretty good with vectors.
"Oh, hey, what's up, Lily?"
I said, as if to say, "I'm so pleasantly surprised to see you here at Pizza Hut, and furthermore that our vectors happen to intersect at the end of this aisle." She smiled.
"Josh, hi."
"What are you up to?"
"Just eating some za."
"Excuse me?"
"Za. It's an abbreviation for pizza."
"Oh, okay." She chuckled at her abbreviation. "My biffle, I mean BFFL, best friend for life, Sadie Bickley, see her over there waving, hi biffle. We like to make abbreviations for everything. Saves a lot of time. Life is short, I guess."
"So true."
"Might as well use every syllable to the fullest." She nodded.
"Again, so true. What are you up to tonight?"
"Meeting up with some friends later. You?"
"Samesies."
Now, see, there it seemed like you added a syllable.
"But samesies is so much more fun to say."
Think about how much time you've wasted saying that extra syllable twice in the last 10 seconds.
"Jeez, I guess you're right," she said. "Those are seconds I am never going to get back."
"Good thing we had this talk." She nodded, mock serious.
"Good thing."
"Anyway, great to see you," I said, swinging my hand out sideways to wind up for a slap-speed handshake.
"You too."
She smiled as our hands collided and pulled back, the fingertips locking like yin and yang. She took a step away, but I didn't let go of her hand, as if I had just remembered something I wanted to tell her. "Hey, we should hang out sometime."
"Totes."
I'm not gonna lie. It all felt pretty smooth. But I took the smoothness down a few notches by adding, "What's your last name? I'll look you up in the student directory and drop you an email." Brad set his fork down on the cafeteria tray. He was skeptical. "Lily? The girl who was at Pizza Hut?"
"Yeah, dude, she has this, I don't know, this X factor, like this spark or vivaciousness."
"Vivaciousness, huh?"
"Yeah," I smiled. "And she would hate that word. She likes a brief... never mind. You just have to meet her."
"I'm not sure you guys would look right together."
"How so?"
"Think about it. She dresses like a model for J. Crew, like she owns a boat. You dress like you are the crew, like you work on a boat."
Very funny. I prefer to say that I dress like a model for Goodwill, thank you very much.
"Well, let me know how it goes."
"I will. How are things with Avery?" Avery was the girl with whom Brad was in an ACR. They had dated some early in high school, and by coincidence, both ended up at William & Mary. Sometimes they made out late at night. Other times, they stayed up late having deep discussions, as college freshmen like to do.
"Complicated," he said.
"They always are," I said. I was waiting for Lily at the coffee shop, wearing khaki shorts that I had made by cutting off a pair of normal khaki pants, paired with a vintage t-shirt from a city council campaign that took place in the early 90s. I had been using my artificial leg less and less. The campus was just too big to walk on it. Crutches were easier. So that's how I was rolling today. Crutches and one leg. Lily arrived also wearing khakis. In her case, a fitted khaki skirt and a light blue button-up cardigan. It was probably cashmere, and I wished I could touch it. You know, to find out for sure. "Hey," she said.
"Hi,"
I said. We hugged. She ordered coffee, and I got an Italian soda flavored with raspberry syrup. As we sat down, I couldn't help but notice the way her curves pushed against her well-tailored J. Crew ensemble. In church when I was growing up, we were always taught that you couldn't help noticing a girl's body. If your gaze lingers, however, that's when the noticing has turned into the sin of lust. So whenever you notice a girl's body, you are supposed to, quote-unquote, bounce your eyes and look at something else. But the only thing I noticed was that my eyes kept bouncing back. We started talking, diving into a three-hour conversation of topics both deep and meaningful, the sort of discussion you hear a lot of on a college campus. Our coffee dates became a weekly event for the next month and a half. My instincts said things were going well, which I should have taken as a sign that they weren't. Chapter 27. It was always tough to tear my friend Kyle away from his studying to do things other people would consider important, like, for example, eating. But tonight, we'd successfully extracted him from his books, and he, Brad, and I were sitting in the cafeteria ingesting calories and swapping stories about high school relationships. I told them a little about Francesca and Evelyn.
"So what did they say?" Kyle asked.
"When?" I replied.
"When you told them you like them?"
I laughed. "Yeah, right. I could never tell them I like them. You know how much risk of rejection that is?"
"Dude," said Kyle, brushing his blonde curls off his forehead. "You're telling me you've never had a DTR?"
"A DT what?"
"A define the relationship talk, where you tell a girl you like her, you talk about whether you two want to be together, that kind of stuff."
Nope. "Did you kiss either of them?" "No, of course not. I've never kissed anyone."
"Yeah, that's probably why you've never had a girlfriend. Brad, back me up here."
"I'm with Kyle," said Brad, leaning forward. "If you never tell a girl you like her or make out with her, I mean, how's she gonna know?"
I stroked my chin. "But what if she doesn't like me?"
"It happens," said Kyle. "That's life. But if you don't have a DTR, you're never gonna know if she likes you too."
"I guess so."
"I know so," said Kyle. "How long have you been having those coffee dates with Lily?" asked Brad.
"I don't know, maybe 6 weeks," I said.
"And no DTR?" asked Kyle.
"No, of course not," I said.
Kyle and Brad exchanged a glance.
"Dude, it's time," said Kyle.
"For a DTR? No way. I need to give it a few more months."
"That's what you've been telling yourself your whole life."
His tone was friendly, but the truth struck deep.
"Yeah," I said thoughtfully. "I guess you're right, but even if I say yes to it now, when I'm with her, I'll choke."
"Don't worry about that," said Kyle.
"Too late, already worried."
"That's because you haven't heard about my boots yet."
What?
"I've got a pair of steel-toed boots under my bunk bed in my dorm," explained Kyle. "The next time you see Lily, if you don't have a DTR, I am going to put on those boots and I am going to kick you as hard as I possibly can in your balls."
"Excuse me?"
"You heard me."
"You're serious?"
"In your balls."
"Steel?"
"Yes, it's an iron alloy. I'm sure you've heard of it."
"Are you joking?"
"Do I look like I'm joking?"
"He doesn't look like he's joking," interjected Brad.
"Did I mention I was the starting forward of my high school soccer team?" asked Kyle. "I've got a pretty mean left foot."
"The next time I see her?"
"Or else."
"Dude," I said, incredulous.
"Steel. Your balls. Think about it."
I sighed, surrendering.
"Okay, you leave me no other choice. Next time I see her, it is." "You do that, my boots stay under my bed."
"Thanks, I guess."
"What else are friends for?" I began by writing and memorizing a speech to give to Lily, which I rehearsed endlessly to make it sound as spontaneous and organic as possible. The content of the speech? If you read the entry for the word beautiful in the thesaurus, you'll have the basic idea. I figured we needed a venue change for this date. A coffee shop wasn't grand enough for the sweeping romanticism of my intentions and feelings. So I emailed Lily and suggested that we go to the college's boathouse, where we could borrow a canoe and paddle around Lake Metoka, the serene and romantic body of water tucked in the woods at the back of campus. She agreed. I told Brad and Kyle, "This is it. I'm going for it. We're gonna row to the middle of the lake and confess our love for each other." On the day of the big date, I knocked on her door and found a little powwow of Lily and her friends on the rug in the center of her dorm room. I was too nervous about my upcoming speech, however, to pay any mind to the weirdness of the situation on the floor. "Ready?" I asked. "Yepers," she said. Indeed she was, decked out in a pair of Sperry topsiders and a coat with anchor-embossed gold buttons. Her friend, Sarah Martin, who was wearing too much makeup as usual, asked me, "What are you all doing?" Not until later, when I would play back her question in my mind, would I hear how scripted it sounded, how well rehearsed, not spontaneous or organic at all. "Canoeing?" I said. "Oh, can I come?" she asked. Right on cue, Lily and all her friends looked up at me as if their very lives were hanging on my reply. Sure, I said, trying to hide my disappointment. Again, I hadn't noticed this was clearly a setup. I was too busy thinking about a steel-toed boot that would be dropping my voice 2 octaves if I didn't find a way to have a DTR today, and how this addition of a third wheel on a date would make the conversation considerably more challenging. I mean, can you imagine a more uncomfortable social situation than having an uninvolved third party sitting in the middle of a canoe while the other 2 passengers hash out the details of what may turn out to be a completely one-sided romantic relationship? But then, a miracle occurred. Lily's BFFL, Sadie, needed a ride to the bank. Lily was the only one with a car. Lily had to give Sadie a ride, drop Sadie off, and then drive back before we could go canoeing. I pounced. "Can I come? To keep you company?" Lily looked around at her group of friends. This was apparently a contingency they had not planned for. They had protected Lily from being alone with me on top of a body of water in a romantic piece of floating fiberglass, yes, but not from this simple errand. "The thing is..." Lily struggled to find an excuse, but none came. "Sure, of course." After we dropped Sadie at the bank, I moved into the front seat of Lily's Volkswagen convertible. The roof was down. I had a window of approximately 2 minutes before we'd get back to our dorm and get Sarah and go to the lake. So I got right down to business. "Lily, there's something I have to tell you," I said, raising my voice over the wind. She winced, like she had been afraid this might happen. Undeterred, I spoke quickly, accelerating my words to be sure I finished my speech before we reached her dorm. As I spoke, I noticed she was also accelerating her car. "Lily, I think you're incredibly beautiful, funny, smart, interesting, clever, pretty, stylish..." "Josh, no," she whimpered. "Let me finish." I had worked long and hard on these lines, and I wasn't about to end my performance prematurely. "Where was I? Stylish? Yeah,
stylish, cool, fun, charming, gorgeous?
Based on her response so far, I knew this conversation was nosediving in complete freefall. Mayday, mayday. But Kyle and Brad had raised a good point. With Francesca and Evelyn, I could only look back and wonder, what if? I would only ever have a chance with Lily if I took the plunge and told her I liked her. Cute, punctual, creative, intelligent, fashionable. And in my mind, that meant dropping this adjective bomb. I guess I believe that the more my speech sounded like an actual thesaurus entry, the more romantic it was. As if the number of adjectives a person uses to describe his affection is directly proportional to the chances it will be reciprocated. And that's why I can't stop thinking about you all day, every single day. Since she didn't seem eager to turn her head and kiss me or anything, the speech ended in a whimper. And I just wanted you to know that. Oh, Josh, she said. Her tone sounded like I had just told her I was facing a life-threatening illness. I was silent. The fact is, she said, I have a crush on Sam Dane. Sam Dane? Sam Dane? That stung. I knew she had liked him during the fall semester and they had dated a little, but I had heard through the rumor mill that he wasn't much interested in her, he being both hilarious and a member of the football team and therefore having his pick of the girls on campus. And she had since moved on. That last part, at least, turned out not to be true. Bummer, I said. By this time, we were parking in front of her dorm. Sarah was standing outside, waiting for our boat outing. You still want to go canoeing? Lily asked. I'm sure she expected me to say no. I mean, who in his right mind would want to keep hanging out after that? But partly out of a misguided need to demonstrate that her rejection had little effect on me, and partly because I knew how uncomfortable it would be for her to sit in a canoe with me now, and I wanted her to suffer through every bit of awkwardness possible as punishment for not liking me, I said yes, I would very much still like to go canoeing. As it turned out, the only person I was punishing was myself. The canoes were two-person, so I ended up with a kayak while Lily and Sarah shared a canoe. They were terrible paddlers, mostly spinning in circles and repeatedly colliding with the shoreline. So I just drifted behind in my kayak, always staying within earshot so as to delay the flood of gossip Lily was no doubt eager to unleash. As long as they knew I was listening, my humiliation would remain a secret. You can't talk about someone behind his back when he's literally, you know, right behind your back, or your boat, as the case may be. I plopped my tray of food down and laid my crutches on the floor underneath the table. Kyle and Brad were already seated, eating. Kyle had a pile of textbooks in front of him. They looked up at me, eyebrows raised. I gave them one word. Disastrous. They gave each other a look. What? I asked. They looked at the floor. What? I demanded. That's kind of what we expected, confessed Kyle. You expected this? Well, we knew she didn't like you, he said. I held up my hand in a stop sign. Hold up. You knew? That's an exaggeration, said Brad. I mean, well, we thought, based on how you described your conversations, that she had put you in the friend zone. I threw my hands up in the air. These were supposed to be my friends. My two best friends. And they had betrayed me, sent me right into the lion's den to get devoured. Are you kidding me? Whoa, hear me out, said Brad. I folded my arms.
Fine, I'm listening.
We didn't know for sure. I mean, maybe she did like you. We didn't know. We just guessed that...
That she didn't like me and you would screw me over? I interrupted.
Look, Josh, said Kyle, you're what, 18 years old? And you've never told a girl you liked her? You've never had a DTR?
That much was true. I stayed silent.
You needed to try it. You needed to tell a girl how you felt about her. And if she doesn't like you, so what?
So what? I said. So what? It's horrible. I feel like she tore my heart out and threw it on the ground. Kyle held up a finger.
You feel like that, yes. And we've all been there, and we all know how much it sucks. But here's the thing. She didn't literally tear out your heart. It's actually still beating inside your chest.
Thanks for the helpful diagnosis, Dr. Premed, I intoned sarcastically.
No, what I mean is, you're still alive. You got rejected. And you survived. Sure, it hurts. And it's not something you'd want to do every day. But now you know you can live through it. And the next time a girl comes along, maybe it won't be quite as terrifying to tell her you like her.
I pursed my lips. I hated to admit it, but they were right. I had been rejected, and it sucked. But I had survived. And none of it would have happened in the first place if it weren't for these friends. I was grateful. I would never admit it out loud, of course, but I did appreciate what they had done, how they had helped me. They had pushed me out of the nest. I didn't fly, exactly. I basically fell straight down and smacked into the ground. But at least I was out of that nest. Unfortunately, I was not quite finished humiliating myself with Lily.
Chapter 28. As I've explained, when it comes to girls, often the best strategy is to take whatever I think I should do and then do the opposite. Following my own instincts, I've found, generally leads to disaster. And Lily was no exception. I didn't get a cell phone until after freshman year of college. I was, like, one of the last people in my generation to get one. So I was a little behind the learning curve. I did not know, for example, that caller ID was a standard feature on all cell phones. And this created problems. I had Lily's number from when we used to go on coffee dates, and even though she'd explicitly told me she did not like me, that she liked Sam Dane, and even though we'd had the most awkward boating date ever, a date so uncomfortable that any guy of at least average intelligence would shrink away from contact with that girl ever again, even in spite of all of this, I figured we should keep in touch over the summer, just in case, you know, she changed her mind. So I called her. Every single day. She never picked up, though, so I figured she was just busy. I didn't realize that her cell phone was recording each missed call, and furthermore, that she was most likely ignoring all the calls in the first place. I didn't want her to know how often I was calling, though. I might have been naive, but I wasn't stupid. So I left a voicemail only once a month, imagining she'd think I was calling only once a month, too. Hey there, it's Josh. I just wanted to say hi. Haven't heard back from you since I called last month. I'm usually pretty good with technology, but somehow it took me the entire summer to figure out that my cell phone had caller ID, that I could ignore incoming calls from people with whom I did not want to speak, and, most importantly, that my phone recorded all missed and ignored calls in a list that I could review at any time. I distinctly remember the moment when I realized this. I had just parked my car and was still sitting in the driver's seat. I thought, I have been calling her daily, all summer. That's, what, 100 calls? I almost threw up on the dashboard. After that, I tried to stop bothering Lily.
I still liked her, of course. That didn't go away. But I figured I'd already put her through more than the FDA recommended lifetime dose of uncomfortable situations. So I kept my crush under wraps from her. We hung out in the same circles for the rest of college, but I made sure only my closest friends knew I still liked her. That is, until one of them told her. But I'm getting ahead of our story. Back to this cell phone caller ID disaster. Yeah, my instincts aren't the best, but they aren't the worst either. And I know that thanks to Stella. Stella, the stalker. Anyway, Stella and I had statistics together sophomore year. The class was at 9:30 in the morning, which for college is really, really early. But I was also really, really interested in statistics, so I signed up. Every morning before class, I would eat breakfast by myself in the cafeteria. A few weeks into the semester, I noticed that when I got up to leave, this girl Stella, I didn't actually know her name yet, so at the time she was just the emaciated-looking girl with stringy brown hair and a penchant for wearing what appeared to be homemade dresses, would stand up too from her table across the room. She would follow me outside and then walk about 3 feet behind me all the way to class. I'm not exaggerating here, people. 3 feet. Silently. Never said a word. Just followed right behind me for the 10-minute walk from the cafeteria to the math building. After a few weeks of this, I couldn't stand it any longer. I turned around and introduced myself. She took this as an invitation to walk side by side with me, which she started doing each day, still in complete silence. Sometimes, I would glance over at her desk during statistics, and 100% of the time, I was able to make this calculation thanks to what I learned in the class, obviously, she was staring at me with creepy, saucer-sized eyes. This all got to be pretty annoying, so I started trying to fake her out at breakfast. I'd get up and put my tray in the dirty dish rack, but then duck back into the food line to get a banana. Sometimes I thought I had fooled her and I would be able to walk alone, but inevitably I found her waiting on the sidewalk somewhere along my route to class. She would be standing there by herself, and when I walked by, she would wordlessly fall into step beside me like this was all totally normal. It got worse. I played intramural soccer every Sunday afternoon on a team with my friends. I played on my crutches. I wasn't really good or anything, but I did all right. Anyway, when I got home from my games each week, I would always have an email waiting from her. The body of the email would be blank. The subject line would be the score of the game with my team listed first, like 1-2 or 4-0. But I never actually saw her on the sidelines, so I couldn't figure out where she was getting this information. Later in the season, I realized she must live in the dorm that overlooked the field. In other words, she was sitting at her window, watching all my games and keeping track of the score. During timeouts, I would take quick glances to look for her face looming in one of the windows. I never did see it, though. And it got worse still. She learned my class schedule and combined it with her walking routes so that in between my classes we would pass each other on the sidewalks. She figured out my weekend interests, and I began spotting her sitting alone in the theater when my friends went to watch a movie or a comedian on campus. This was when I started worrying she might be watching me sleep or something, and when I decided it all had to stop. I had become so aware of her movements that I was basically reverse stalking her. Like, I knew that every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, she would be in the lobby of the campus center, sitting on the couch pretending to read while she was actually watching the front doors, waiting for me to walk by. So that Wednesday, I walked right up to her in the lobby of the campus center. "We need to talk," I said. From my tone, I thought it was pretty clear that the exchange wasn't going to turn out real well for her,
but she just smiled shyly, like this was the moment she'd been dreaming of for many months.
She closed her book and slid it into the canvas bag sitting on the floor beside her Velcro-fastened sneakers.
"I would be pleased to talk with you, Joshua," she said.
She looked around like she was wondering if our conversation might be too special to hold in a crowded place like this one.
"Okay, here's the thing," I said, looking down at her on the couch. "You know how every morning you leave breakfast at the same time as me?"
Her face fell.
"You noticed that?"
"Noticed? Of course. How could I not? Of course I noticed. You walk beside me every single day."
"I meant how we finish eating at the same time," she said. "I was hoping you would just think it was coincidence."
No. Didn't think it was coincidence," I said. "I also noticed how you know my class schedule and follow me around between classes."
She didn't attempt to deny it. Instead, she tried to distract me with flattery.
"I find pleasure in being with you. You are different from other men."
It was strange. I'd spent my whole life trying to become a man. But when she actually used that word, it made me shiver with discomfort.
"That kind of thing is not normal," I said.
"But if I didn't follow you around, how would I get to see you?" she asked.
She looked genuinely confused, like everything so far had been part of the early stages of a normal relationship, and the only problem here was my not being comfortable with her entirely reasonable actions. I decided two things in that moment. Number one, she needed a wake-up call. Number two, I would be her alarm clock.
"Okay, check it out. There are three types of social encounters," I began.
"Number one, a planned encounter. That's like when you meet someone for lunch or coffee at a set time and place. Number two, a random encounter. That's like when you just happen to walk by someone on the way to class. With me so far?" She nodded. "The third type is a planned encounter disguised to look like a random encounter. That's like when you stand in the grass and wait so you can wave at me when I walk by on my way to English Lit."
She was quiet for a while as she considered this.
"So, you don't want to hang out with me anymore," she concluded.
What? When had we ever hung out?
It was true, though. I had no interest in hanging out. But I couldn't say so directly. After all, I had experienced my fair share of rejection. I knew how it felt to be in her shoes. In fact, I had made some uncomfortably stalkerish moves myself, what with calling Lily every day the previous summer. I wanted to believe that calling someone once every 24 hours wasn't quite as bad as physically inserting yourself between a guy and his class multiple times each day, but still, I had to have some sympathy for Stella.
"No," I said, "I'm happy to talk to you. I just think we should have more of the type 2 encounters and less type 3.
She stood and threw her bag over her shoulder.
"Don't worry," she said. "I will no longer be bothering you."
She said this in a cool tone, as if I should feel bad and argue with her that, oh no, she isn't a bother at all. But the truth was, my daily life would be more pleasant without her.
"Great," I said. "Or, I mean, it's great that we're on the same page now."
The next morning, I enjoyed an incredibly peaceful walk to statistics, and then another Stella-less journey back to my dorm. If I had known that it would be this easy, I would have explained the three types of social encounters a long time ago. But later that day, as I walked by the library on the way to my next class, I shivered as I passed a spot where she always used to stand. She wasn't there, but I felt sure she was watching me. Maybe I was being paranoid, I told myself. Just to be sure, I looked up at the library and scanned all four floors of windows for her face.
Nothing.
Whew.
I was getting paranoid. I smiled and shook my head as I continued walking. I passed by a tree that had been blocking my view of a few of the windows. That's when I glanced back at the library and saw her face pressed against the glass on the second story. I was so startled that I literally jumped back, nearly knocking over some girls walking behind me. I apologized and then looked up at the window again, but she was gone. When I got back to my dorm, I wrote her an email. Watching from windows still counts as a Type 3 encounter. She replied a few hours later with a 4,000-word email that contained a summary of every conversation we had ever had, including what each of us had been wearing on that day, as well as her interpretations of the significance of the t-shirts I had chosen. For example, I wore this shirt on that day because it was the same shirt I was wearing when we met. Her email was creepily written in the third person, referring to herself as the girl and me as the boy. It concluded, eventually, with a promise to neither talk to me nor watch me from any windows ever again. And Stella was true to her word. After that, I saw her only once every couple months, usually at the library if I was there studying or whatever. I'd say, "Hi, Stella," but she would ignore me, which was kind of awkward, but honestly, less uncomfortable than when she used to follow me around. The thing I preferred not to admit was how much Stella reminded me of myself. The social awkwardness, the chance meetings that were not actually happening by chance. I mean, I had gone out of my way freshman year of high school to meet Liza Taylor Smith, right? The truth is, I only thought of Stella as a stalker because I wasn't interested in dating her. If I had been attracted to her, I might have thought her tendency to plan her life around mine was cute. That's the thing about human beings. If we have a crush on someone, that person's every behavior attracts us even more. But if we don't like that person, the very same behavior will annoy us. Chapter 29. A lot of people want their first kiss to be special. I just wanted mine to be during this lifetime. I had missed my chances for special already. I missed them at the waterfall with Francesca and at prom with Evelyn. I was 20 years old now, for crying out loud, and I'd still never kissed anyone. I didn't care about special anymore. I needed only a pair of willing female lips and a little bit of courage. I found both late one night when I was walking this girl Katie back from a party. Katie was a friend, but attractive enough. I was still head over heel. Yes, heel, singular, that's not a typo. For Lily, of course, but I needed to get this first kiss thing out of the way. I mean, what if Lily changed her mind about me and we started dating? Obviously, I would need to have some skills to impress her. I wouldn't want my tongue flopping around all awkwardly in Lily's mouth, revealing my status as a total kissing noob. I was sitting with Katie on a couch in her dorm room. "So, I would kind of like to kiss you right now," I said. "Really?" She looked rather startled, but not uninterested. "Yeah," I confirmed. "Maybe you should give it a try." "The thing is," I glanced at the wall, "I kind of like this other girl." She drew back, her tone going cold. "So why would you want to kiss me?" "Well, I mean, I like you too. Not quite the way I like her, but that is, I'm definitely attracted to you. Yeah, you're really pretty." She inclined her head. "Go on. I've always had a little thing for you, and, you know, it just feels right." She raised her eyebrows. "So?" I asked. "So what? Do you think we should kiss?" "Let's give it a shot and find out." I frowned. Yeah, about that. So, I've never kissed anyone before.
Never?
No.
Wow.
What?
It's just that, how old are you?
20. So does that mean yes? And on it went like this for, I'm not kidding you, over 30 minutes. Back and forth discussions about whether we should kiss, what implications it might have for our friendship, what our respective friend groups would think about it, whether as a Christian I was allowed to kiss her as an atheist, etc. It was all very scientific and analytical. Just the way I like it. But kisses are not supposed to be scientific or analytical. In fact, the longer you examine a kiss under a microscope, the smaller becomes its magic. So when are you going to make a move on me? She asked. Like I've been telling you, I really don't know how, I said. You have to get us started. We sat in silence for a few moments, and then suddenly there was something wet and slimy inserting itself between my lips, prying open my jaw and exploring the concavities of my mouth. I realized that this was her tongue. We were kissing. Having never kissed before, I wasn't aware that you are supposed to close your eyes. Big mistake. Her face was 1 inch from mine, and at that distance, I could see every pore, every eyebrow follicle, every wrinkle of melanin-hued epidermis. I shut my eyes in horror. I'm not sure if this is allowed, she said, grabbing my hand and placing it firmly over her breast. For a moment, I was too shocked to respond. Not shocked at her actions, shocked at how it felt. I had always assumed breasts would feel squishy and heavy, like a cross between a stress ball and a waterbed mattress. What I felt instead was unexpectedly soft. That's when I realized what I was touching. No, I snapped my hand back. Definitely not allowed. We got back to making out, and by the time I made it home, the sky was beginning to turn to light. That turned out to be my first and only kiss in college. I didn't do much dating there either because, as I said, I still liked Lily. But I tried to keep it a secret. She was in my circle of friends, and I didn't want to make things weird for her. Only Brad and Kyle and my other close friends knew I still liked her, and they didn't say anything. That is, until senior year. See, senior year, we were all 21. And alcohol, among many other side effects, reduces people's ability to keep secrets. One Friday night, my guy friends and I were coming out of a bar. I should specify that this was not a cool bar by any means, but rather the karaoke night at a bar on the first floor of a hotel near campus. But in a small town like Williamsburg, there isn't always a lot to do, so watching old people sing karaoke at a hotel on Friday night is, believe it or not, sometimes your best option. I should also remind you that I didn't drink at all until I was 21, and even after I was 21, I still had a religious hangover that made me afraid of more than one or two beers. So, although some of my friends were a bit tipsy, I was pretty sober at this point. We stumbled out into the night air, and guess who was in the parking lot? That's right, Lily and some of her girlfriends. Hellos and what are you guys up to tonights were exchanged. Side note. You've heard of a stage whisper, right? The term comes from live theater, like a play or whatever, when one actor pulls another aside and whispers to him loudly enough that the audience can hear it. The audience is meant to believe that even though the whisper had enough volume to fill up the auditorium, the other characters on stage could not hear it,
It was a private conversation between the two characters who are, quote-unquote, whispering to each other. Drunk people are prone to accidental stage whispers, inadvertently underestimating the volume of their whispering. Upon seeing Lily in the parking lot, my friend Ben, who had apparently thrown back quite a few drinks while watching the karaoke, stage whispered to me in a voice that was clearly audible to everyone in the parking lot, and probably everyone back inside the bar, too.
Dude, it's your girl!
Just in case it was not 100% clear whom he was talking about, he pointed his finger at Lily, too, while tapping his other hand on my shoulder. I turned to Ben and whispered in his ear, an actual whisper, not a stage one,
"Shut up, dude. She can hear you."
Drunk though he was, he could hear the urgency in my voice, and he shut up. I relaxed a little. It was over. Or so I thought. A week later, I was hanging out at Lily and Sadie's apartment. It was late at night, and there were just four of us there. Lily, Sadie, Brad, my roommate of 3 years, and I. We were sitting on the couches in their living room. And then, out of nowhere, Lily dropped the bomb.
"What was your friend Ben saying the other night?" she asked me.
I was pretty sure I knew what she was talking about, but I hoped, I really hoped that I did not. So I played dumb. "What night?" I asked, putting a puzzled expression on my face.
"You know, the other night," she said.
No. Sadie and Brad were silent as they watched this exchange play out.
"You know, in the parking lot," said Lily. "As you guys were leaving karaoke..."
She had me cornered. So I tried to acknowledge the night without having to answer her question.
"Oh, right. Yeah, that was a fun night. What did you all end up doing?"
But Lily was undeterred by my attempt to change the subject. She pressed forward.
"So, what did he say to you?"
I was trapped. She was obviously not going to let me off without answering her question. But I couldn't tell her the truth. I couldn't tell her that he'd said, "Dude, it's your girl," because doing so would force me to reveal that I'd still had a crush on her after all these years. But I couldn't lie, could I? I'm not a big fan of lying. For one thing, I'm not really good at it. I don't exactly know how to lie, and I'm always afraid that I'll forget which lie I told to which person and get caught later when my stories don't match up. But this was an impossible dilemma. So I did the unthinkable. I lied.
Oh yeah, I stammered. He was saying how he had forgotten his driver's license and he had to go back to the dorm and get it so they would let him into the bar.
See? Told you I was a bad liar.
It was like the worst lie ever. Ben had clearly said, "Dude, it's your girl," and everyone knew it. I could have at least come up with a lie that sounded like a similar phrase. For example, I could have told her that he had said, "Hats off to the Duke of Earl." Nonsensical, but similar. Instead, I made up this lie, which was an obviously implausible story because, oh yeah, we had just walked out of the bar. Obviously, he had used his license to get inside in the first place. But mercifully, Lily did not realize I was lying. Or, more likely, she chose not to call me out on it. She glanced over at Sadie. A glance I couldn't read, but wished I could, because I imagined it contained oh so much meaning. And then she said, "Oh, okay, his ID. I see." I changed the subject, and a few minutes later, Brad and I said our goodnights. During the walk back to our dorm, we analyzed the earth-shattering conversation that had just gone down. My adrenaline was still pumping. We wondered, Did she actually know what Ben had said? Did she know I was lying? Did she know I'd had a crush on her for the entire 4 years of college? Hypothesis.